Come one, come all, to the show where former pro football stars tell their stories. Plus the 12th man segment with Sports One Marketing. It's all right here, right now, on Thursday Night Tailgate. With your hosts, Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari.
Good evening, everybody, and thank you for joining us again tonight on Thursday Night Tailgate, the place where you can come every week to hear great guests from the NFL Alumni Association, the Canadian Football League, plus celebrities from around the entertainment business. You can hear them tell their stories, and the only thing we ask you to do is to sit back, relax, and enjoy it. I'm your host, Chris Mascaro, and tonight we have an amazing guest list to share with you. So like we say, settle in. Relax, let us take your mind off everything else going on in your life for the next couple of hours. But before we get to all of that, let's kick off the show the very best way we could possibly do it, and that's by bringing in my co-host, Mr. Bob Lazzari. Bob, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
Hi, Chris. I'm doing okay. How about you, man?
Well, fantastic. Thank you, sir. Bob, before we get into the guests and kicking off the show, I wanted to get a quick thought from you on the rules changes that we saw the NFL owners approve this week, moving the extra point back, right, from the 2-yard line to the 15, making the extra point, try 32 yards next season. Good idea or bad, in your opinion?
Man, you know, I'm a purist, Chris, but you know, it became I can see why they did it, Chris. I think they said 99% of extra points were made.
Right.
You know, this is just going to make it a little more interesting. We're not going to see 99%, that's for sure, because of the change. And it'll be interesting if we could ask that to Matt Barr later on.
Right.
But it's going to be very interesting. When I first read it, I said, well, you know, for people that consider it boring, and that's when most people go to the refrigerator, Chris, you know, for an extra point. So maybe
right.
In that case, it's a good thing. You know, we don't like to see a lot of the tradition changed. But in this case, I think it's not a bad thing. It's going to make it – it's going to definitely – I can guarantee you it's probably going to cost some teams some games. So they're going to have to be very – right on top of things and can't let their guard down. And that's not a bad thing for football. So I'm kind of on the edge, Chris, but I'd say right now I'm favoring it.
Yeah, so, you know, to your point, Bob, right, 99% clip is exactly right. Last 5 years, 99% of the extra points have been made. But you know what, Bob? Over the last 5 years, field goals from inside 33 yards are made 93% of the time. And last year, 32 out of 33 from that distance. That's 97%.
Wow.
But I'm curious, Bob, you know, they're going to continue to spot the ball at the two if a team chooses to go for two, and teams converted to 2-point conversions last year 48% of the time. So I'm wondering, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see, and to your point, we'll talk to Matt Barr, who's going to join us here in a little while, about that. But it's going to be interesting to see if this gives coaches pause to consider, you know, would they consider going for two a little more often next year versus, you know, trying to move it back again. You know, teams are kickers, and this is, you know, another thing we'll talk to Matt about is, you know, kickers are so good nowadays, right? They're so automatic, it feels like, from inside of 40 yards, maybe even inside of 45, and, you know, guys are making even, you know, a large percentage of the time beyond 50. So, you know, you got to wonder if it's going to really change much of anything, but, you know, maybe every once in a while, Bob, and you're right, you know, someone's going to miss that 33-yard field goal or 32-yard field goal, you know, for the extra point, I should say. So, I think it makes, you know, coaches consider one more thing. And maybe to your point, maybe, you know, fans stay in their seats a little bit longer to see how it turns out next year. So I agree with you. I think it's going to be a fun thing.
Yep. And like I said, it might take some more strategy into the game. So,
right.
It's a great thing to at least see what happens early in the preseason.
Right. All right, folks, TNT is brought to you by former Bengals and Falcons tight end Reggie Kelly and the great folks over at Kyven Foods. Be sure to spice up everything on your menu by adding Kyven salsa, sauces, and spices to whatever it is you're cooking. Check them out online at kyven82.com, and Kyven is K-Y-V-A-N, the number 82.com, to see all of their great products. TNT is also sponsored by Dr. Peter Candelora and the great folks over at Coastal Orthopedics. Does it hurt when you get out of bed in the morning, folks? Are you simply just dealing with joint pain? Well, stop. Do what the Gridiron Greats do to get relief, and that's contact Coastal Orthopedics. For more information, check them out online at bone-dr.com. Baseball season clearly way underway at this point. And if you love the game, you need to check out the Louisville Slugger Museum and Factory. If you haven't been, you really got to go. You get to see the actual bats that your favorite major league stars are going to be stepping to the plate with this season. They're going to be made right in front of you because you get to walk the actual live production line and see the full process going on. And they let you know whose bats those are. To find out more information and to book your trip this summer, go to sluggermuseum.com. And we also want to give a shout out to our good friends over at the Gridiron Greats organization. They do such wonderful things to help take care of the guys who played way before there were six-figure salaries or even health care coverage. They've got a great event coming up next month. It's an evening with the greats. Mike Ditka, Mean Joe Green, Fred Biletnikoff, Tom Mack, Dick Vermeil, Jimbo Covert, Jim McMahon, and many more. It's a Hall of Fame dinner and a golf outing on Friday, June 12th, Saturday, June 13th at the Silverton Casino and Hotel out in Las Vegas. For more information, go to gridirongreats.org/Hall of Fame. All right. Who are our guests tonight? Well, first up is in our 12th man segment, along with Sports One Marketing CEO and bestselling author David Meltzer, is going to be a bestselling author in his own right, Chris Gardner. Chris wrote an autobiography about his life, which was a number one bestseller called The Pursuit of Happiness. You guys know it. Remember the movie with Will Smith? Great stuff. He backed that up with a second bestseller called Start Where You Are, Life Lessons in Getting From Where You Are to Where You Want to Be. We'll hear what he and David are working on together when they join us here in just a few minutes. Following them will be former Steelers, Browns, Giants, 49ers, and Patriots kicker Matt Barr. We talked about that a moment ago. Matt was with my Steelers in the last of their four Super Bowl victories in the 70s. In all, Matt played 17 years in the league and was one of the most accurate kickers during the decade of the 80s. We'll catch up with him about 20 minutes from now. He'll be followed by Vikings Hall of Fame defensive end Chris Dolman. Chris played his ball at the University of Pittsburgh. A big fan of that, of course. At the tail end of Pitt's glory days, which was sort of in the mid-70s to the early 80s, the last time Pitt was really relevant on the national title scene, he went on to become one of the best defensive ends in NFL history, was named to the Pro Bowl 8 times and inducted into the Hall of Fame back in 2012. What you may not know is Chris is also a pretty darn good golfer. He appeared on the Golf Channel's Big Break NFL Puerto Rico, losing out in the final round to Jerry Rice. We'll talk some golf and some football with Chris. He'll be here about 35 minutes from now. Later this hour, we'll be joined by former Lions guard Hess Hempstead. Hess was with the Lions back in the middle 90s, blocking for a guy named Barry Sanders, who I hear was pretty good. Plus also our good friend Chris Mitchell was the quarterback at that point. While Hess was with the Lions, they went to the playoffs almost every season, so he's got to be happy with what he saw from the Lions kind of getting back to it last season. We'll get his take on the Lions then and now when he joins us about 50 minutes from now. Then we'll kick off the next hour with former Heisman Trophy winner Johnny Rogers. Johnny broke virtually every offensive record at Nebraska and set the NCAA all-time all-purpose yards record with nearly 5,600 yards. Johnny, like our friend Joe Pisarcik, took his talents to the CFL versus going to the NFL in the mid-70s. We'll learn why and what happened when he tried to return to the NFL a few years later when he joined just about an hour from now. And then we'll wrap up the show with our good friend and super agent Lee Steinberg. I'm curious to learn what he and his client, Patriots backup quarterback Garrett Gilbert, have to say about Deflategate. Plus, we'll get Lee's thoughts on what it's been like from him making his way back to an industry he once dominated. I know this, there isn't a busier man in sports besides, two of the busiest men in sports are going to be right here on the show tonight. That one is Lee Steinberg. The other is David Meltzer. So it's always an honor to have both men on the show with us. And Lee will be here about 90 minutes from now. So as always, we are wall to wall with great guests for you on Thursday Night Tailgate. And we thank you for being here and taking the journey with us tonight. Let's get the ball rolling like we do, though, every week here on TNT by saluting our brave men and women serving in our military and listening in tonight on Armed Forces Radio. We want to pass on our sincere thanks to our veterans and everyone currently serving in every branch of the military and public service. You folks are absolutely incredible, and we can't thank you enough for what you do for us. The sacrifices you either made as a veteran or are making now for every one of us. We truly appreciate what you do to protect the freedoms we all have and the liberty you provide to us that allows the rest of us to do what we do. Our sincere thanks as well to Sean Cruz and all the folks over at the Armed Forces Radio Network. It's an honor for us to have our show be a part of your network. You can find our show by going to armedforcesradionetwork.org. And for the veterans listening in tonight, be sure to check out globalvoiceforveterans.org. It's a great site with a wealth of information for our veterans. There's news and articles specifically geared for veterans out there. I'm sure you're going to find those articles both interesting and beneficial. Again, globalvoiceforveterans.org. I also want to remind everyone about the places you can find us up and down the dial and on the internet. You can stream or download us for free from our site, of course, thursdaynighttailgate.com. Plus, our friends over at Boost Radio are streaming our show every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Go to boostradionetwork.com and click on the on-air link that you're going to find in the upper right-hand corner of their homepage to hear us. You can also find us on iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com, Spreaker, SoundCloud. Our good friends now over at Audio Boom are featuring us on their site. Plus, you can download us from iTunes as well. And you can take us with you everywhere you go on your mobile device via Stitcher and Player.fm as well. All right, before we get to our 12th man segment with David Meltzer, let's hear from our good friend Joe Lajanusa and our friends over at Kiven Foods.
Add great flavor to your next tailgate party with Kiven Salsas. Former NFL tight end Reggie Kelly created these salsas for dipping chips and much more. In hot and mild flavors, Kiven Salsas make a great marinade. They are terrific in meatloaf and are super toppers for everything from baked potatoes to scrambled eggs. It's a great ingredient to enjoy in a variety of family favorite meals. And some people say Kiven Salsa is a meal to itself. With all the possibilities, Kiven is truly salsa with soul. Kiven salsas are also made from natural ingredients, and they are preservative-free. So look for Kiven, that's K-Y-V-A-N, at area Walmart stores or online. Click on the Kiven logo on our website to check retail and online locations. More information at Kiven82.com.
If you want to wow your guests at your next house party or your next tailgate party, be sure to serve them plenty of Kiven Foods, salsas, sauces, and spices to liven up everything you're going to put on your menu. Be sure to check out their recipes that you can find on our site, thursdaynighttailgate.com, as well as their own site, kiven82.com. And again, Kiven is K-Y-V-A-N, the number 82.com. And give those guys a like on Facebook. That's important to them too. One taste, and you're going to appreciate the goodness. All right, now joining us on the Kiven Foods guest line in our weekly 12th man segment is Sports One Marketing CEO David Meltzer. And his special guest tonight is Chris Gardner. Again, like we said in the intro, wrote an autobiography about his life, The Pursuit of Happiness, which everybody knows was one of the best movies you're going to see in a long time. That was a few years ago that was starring Will Smith. We are happy to have both gentlemen with us on the show tonight. Good evening, Dave. What are you and Chris working on together?
You know, Chris and I were working on actually putting the group together to try to buy an NBA team originally, and have a great Chris story. I had no idea the fame and the intelligence and the wide breadth of experience that Chris had. I thought he was another broker-dealer when I met him, and he was so humble and so complimentary for no reason for my book and my efforts. You know, he asked, he had read my book and he was so complimentary. And he said to me after he had read my book, he said, "Dave, would you mind me sending my book out to you?" And we were deep into this deal. All of a sudden I get a huge care package with a Will Smith signed DVD and a signed book by Chris Gardner, Pursuit of Happiness. And he won my heart over for life. And this, I said to him, Could you do me a favor and come on our show, Chris, and just help share the inspiration of what I think is one of the best thought leaders in our country. He travels the world. And so, Chris Gardner, I just want to say thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for honoring us by being on, especially the military. I know a lot of your principles and the things that you've gone through are applicable to our military. So I just want to welcome you and have you kind of give a little bit of background and what you're doing now, and we'll go from there. Does that sound fair?
Well, look, David, first, let me ask you a question. How long have you been doing this show now?
Almost a year.
And you're so honored to have me on. You just finally got around to me, huh?
Well, you're like, okay, I didn't know who you were, man. I thought you were Will Smith.
Well, let me tell you something. First of all, thank you so much for having me. And I am truly appreciative of you guys giving a big shout out to all of our veterans and guys that are serving currently. When I say guys generically, I spent some of the best years of my life, David, in the U.S. Navy. And I never wanted to go to college. That was never of any interest to me. I grew up with my uncles. I never knew my dad, but I had these uncles, all of whom had been in the military. So I grew up hearing all these stories about Paris and Tokyo and Japan and the Philippines. And I made the decision as a young guy, I'm going to join the Navy and see the world. Man, I joined the Navy. They sent me to North Carolina.
That's a different world.
Oh, my God. Yes, it's a totally different world. U.S. Marine Corps Base, Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, 60,000 Marines and 600 sailors. But we figured the odds were even. So thank you for having me on the show, man. What's happening?
I'm just up in San Jose. I met with a great company that you have to be introduced to called Schmoop. Mm-hmm. And the woman, Ellen Siminoff, sold her first company for $400 million to Adobe and then was the first female CEO of Yahoo. So she's a fairly well-regarded entrepreneur, a Princeton grad with an MBA from Stanford. So she has the opposite of you and I. She loves school. And we're going to be doing a gratitude festival in Indianapolis to thank all the first responders.
Yeah.
And hopefully it'll catch fire in the fall, and you'll be getting an invitation to speak there with me, hopefully, and honor me with your
Well, you let
expertise.
Me know. I'll be there, bro. You let me know. I'm there.
Absolutely. I thought maybe we'd talk a little bit about the complexity of purchasing a team. You and I, I've gone through it twice, and this was yours. First foray at it. And I think our listeners would really like to know, like, your perception of that whole process and how that works and how complex it is dealing with billions of dollars in a limited commodity like an NBA team.
Man, first of all, let me tell you this. That was the first time in my career I had ever been a part of a group of guys that smart, that bright, and had the wherewithal to pull something off. That's also, David, was the first time I had ever bid $700 million for something and lost.
No.
Think about that for a second. $700 million, the second highest price ever offered for an NBA franchise and lost. But you know what, Dave? It was a good loss.
Yeah,
it was
I
a
agree.
Good loss. Because we learned some things that will assure that we win next time, number one. Number 1A, I got to know you.
Oh,
I got to tell you.
Person.
I got to tell you. The truth is there's already another opportunity that's presented itself, David. Let me get my arms around it a little bit better, and we'll be talking.
I can't wait.
To have the opportunity... This all goes back, David, to my mom, who told me from the very beginning, son, you can do or be anything. I believed it. I will never forget being a young guy getting ready to watch a college basketball game. It's the NCAA Final Four. My favorite team, the UCLA Bruins, was taking on Jacksonville State University and a kid named Artis Gilmore. Okay?
Wow. Yeah,
I remember watching the game. I'm all excited, and I said out loud, talking to the television, wow, one day that guy is going to make $1 million. Thank
wow.
God my mother overheard me, David. My mother overheard me saying, and she said, son, if you want to, one day you can make $1 million. But she also went on to say, if you want to make the team, go to the gym. But if you want to buy the team, go to the library.
That's a good for her.
Solid advice.
Whoa! man. I mean, you know, you have to be careful saying stuff to your children because we were listening.
Oh, yeah.
We were listening.
Oh, yeah. And I thank my mom every day for two things. One, she moved my butt out from Akron, Ohio when I was 9 to San Diego. So I owe her for life. And she also had a piece of advice to me saying, if you're not going to invest in yourself, what are you ever going to invest in?
Wow.
And I took that to heart. And if you read my book, and Chris, I know we talk about it a lot. There's a lot of my mom's sayings in there and her advice. And I just want to, while I'm on the air once again, thank your mother and thank my mother because they didn't have the easy road with us. They must have done something right?
Well, you know what, man? Let me tell you something. I believe this in all sincerity. All mothers, now I can't talk a lot about fathers. I'm a guy who never knew his dad, okay? But all mothers went to the same school, David, because they all taught us all of the same things.
Yeah.
It's universal. I mean, your mom in Akron, Ohio, my mom in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, probably were the same woman.
Yeah, and Warren's mom raised 6 kids herself, like my mom, in Los Angeles. 5 girls, 1 boy.
Wow. Incredible. You know, you hear a lot of times about women can't raise men. Well, I can think of a few women who raised some pretty good men. That would be my mom, your mom, and Warren's mom.
I agree. And thank you. And we were just blessed. I was hoping maybe, Chris, you had a couple questions. The other Chris Pescaro, if you had a couple questions for our special guest.
Yeah, well, you know, Chris, I mean, obviously having, you know, written the book and having gotten to see the movie with Will Smith playing you, and I'm just curious, what was it like for you going through the movie process and then actually seeing your story up on the big screen?
You know what? I had a very, very unique experience. It never happens. Normally, when you sell the rights to your life story to Hollywood, they give you a check and say, bye, we'll send you 2 tickets to the premiere. That's normally how it happens.
Yeah.
This was totally different. Will Smith said to me from the very beginning, I want you to be on the set every day of filming because, quote, playing you is going to be harder than playing Muhammad Ali.
Wow.
His point was everybody knows Ali. They know what happened. They know the stories, but nobody knows you.
Right.
This guy, for 17 weeks of filming, Chris, while everybody else was watching him, he was watching me. How I move, how I express myself, how I show tension. This guy had me down to the point that he had to sign my name to a contract in the movie. He signs an exact replica of my signature.
Wow.
Man, if I ever have a problem with identity theft, I know who I'm looking for.
At least you can collect too, Chris. You'll be able to collect. That's good.
Oh, man. Let me tell you something. I saw the check Will got for playing me, and I told him, I could beat me for half of that.
That's awesome.
So to that end, Chris, what's it like when you're back, you know, with the fellas and you're looking at, you know what? Will Smith played me in a movie.
Oh, man. You know what? I don't do that. I don't do that because they already know. Right? The world knows. Look, Sony tells me 1 billion people around the world have seen that film. The truth is, it became the first American film ever shown in China, David.
Wow.
Wow.
I mean, they copied it, I'm sure.
Oh, my. Look, if we could get a penny off each of those copies, we'd be all right.
That's right. Forget Will Smith's check.
Oh,
out
man.
The window with that check.
But you know what? I do have to say this in all sincerity. As great as Will's performance was, my personal opinion, that little boy was better. Jaden Smith.
Oh, yeah.
Man, Jaden Smith has got more talent in his big toe than Will Smith got in his whole body.
Chris, Before we let you go, we hope you'll come back and join us. We'd love to spend a whole segment getting the opportunity to talk through the whole thing with you. But let our listeners know, how can they follow you on social media? And then what's coming up next for you outside of potentially you and Dave buying a professional team somewhere?
Man, you can get me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, CEO of Happiness, and I love my job. And that is happiness with a Y. And
right.
We show happiness with a Y for one reason, because it is you and your responsibility, you and your opportunity to create the life that you want for you and your family. That's why we spell happiness with a Y. That's number one. Number 1A, look, I did allude to another opportunity presenting itself in professional sports, but David and I have to talk offline. But stay tuned, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. This thing could be happening a lot sooner than you realize.
Wow. Right.
I love it. I'm going to start spelling gratitude with a Y. That's
David.
Well, we look forward to hearing all the details, fellas. Chris, thank you so much for your time.
Hey, man.
And being a part of
thank
the show
you, guys.
Tonight.
God bless. David, talk to you soon.
I hope so. Take care, my friend.
Take care, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys. Take care.
All right. Dave, let our listeners know, where can they find you and hear you over the next few weeks?
Yeah, we got the MeltzerMission.com still, the 30-day gratitude challenge, at the Meltzer. But mainly, we're all over the place. Have a huge tournament for the Irvine Public School Foundation with Marshall Falk and Warren Moon, right in Irvine, June 4th. Just a variety of different speaking engagements, both corporate and college. I got a big one at the end of the summer for the opening game at UT for the Texas. We're going to launch a Mike Sullivan mural, the famous sports artist that did the art for my book as well. But one of the other neat programs that we have, I just want to bring some attention to, is we're working with the NFL with their flag football program, and we have Hall of Fame flagfootball.com. We're trying to get girls and boys to play flag football, to learn the game and get educated so they play it safely and hopefully move on to both tackle and flag. So as always, Chris, I'm extremely grateful with a Y, and I just am so blessed to be on this show and others with you. And anything I can do, please let me know. MeltzerMission.com. Be grateful and empathetic. And most of all, like Chris Gardner says, be happy.
There you go. Dave, thank you so much. It's always, you know, our privilege to have you as part of the show. We look forward to catching up with you again soon. The MeltzerMission.com, that site, you know, the proactive emails I get every day with the words of wisdom, fantastic stuff. And I highly encourage everyone to go check it out, sign up, because you're going to be very glad. It's going to put a smile on your face every morning when you hit your email inbox. But Dave, thank you very much. And we'll catch up again soon.
Thank you, my friend. Take care.
All right. Good night, Dave. Great stuff, Bob. Chris Gardner, boy, I tell you what, A, great laugh. B, what a great, you know, a great amount of work that, you know, he's put together with the books and the movie, and holy cow, can't wait to have him back.
Yeah, and he sounds like, you're right, we have to get him for a full segment, Chris, and, you know, talk about, you know, inspiration and how this guy can have an impact on kids and just the way he grew up, and it's everything that you and I talk about all the time, so we hope to get him on soon.
Absolutely right. All right, we've got our next guest, Matt Barr, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Matt on the other side of this station identification.
This is Christine Lisi, and you're listening to Thursday Night Tailgate, where NFL stars go to tell their stories with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari on the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Now joining us on the Kyven Foods guest line is Matt Barr. Let me remind you about Matt's background. He's from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, excelled in both football and soccer in high school, which you may expect since his father, Walter Barr, is a National Soccer Hall of Famer. Matt played his college ball at Penn State and was a consensus All-American in 1978. He was a sixth-round draft pick by my Pittsburgh Steelers in 1979, arriving just in time to be a part of the Steelers' fourth Super Bowl championship team of the 70s. Played in the league from 79 to 1995 with the Steelers, Browns, 49ers, Giants, Patriots, and Eagles. He was also a part of the Giants Super Bowl 25 championship team that beat the Bills. He led the league in field goal percentage in 1983, converting nearly 88% of his field goals. Over the course of his career, Matt converted just over 72% of his field goals and scored 1,422 points, good for 25th all time. And we are both thrilled and honored to have him with us tonight on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Matt, Chris, and Bob, thank you for joining us.
Well, Chris, Bob, I've got nothing to say. You just said it all. I don't have anything else to say to you guys.
You just gave my, I think my we got a couple thought. Of questions for you, Matt.
Now, you mentioned my father. He was part of one of the greatest upsets of all time.
Yes.
The United States played England in Brazil in the World Cup and beat them 1-0. My dad was the captain of the team and had the assist on the goal. He took a shot. Another guy changed direction with his head in the air, and it was considered, still considered, one of the greatest upsets in the world of soccer. And he hates having his career reduced to one shot, one goal. But you know what? All athletes know that their career is usually reduced to one or two sentences. That's a pretty good sentence to have in your career.
Yeah, it is. 1950, I know. I was when I was doing the research for you coming on the show, I saw that. That's fantastic stuff. But you know what, Matt, I also read he never celebrated goals or accepted when people told him how good he was. Why was that?
I think because he like us, he said, always look forward. Act like you've done it before. And he didn't care what sport any of his kids played. He just wanted us to have a good balance between athletics and academics. Play all the sports. Whatever sport is in season, play it. I think he was drafted in baseball. He was a catcher. My oldest brother was in the 72 Olympics, but he was also drafted in baseball, I think, by the Orioles. We all played pro soccer. My sister was on the national championship gymnastics team at Penn State, and we all just tried to have that balance between athletics and academics. One was not good without the other.
Speaking of academics, you guys, you went to Penn State. You followed your brother Chris there as the kicker at Penn State. Did you ever consider playing anywhere else, or being from Eastern Pennsylvania, was that the only choice?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understand what you're asking.
No, I'm just saying, you know, you followed your brother Chris as the kicker at Penn State. You know, from a college perspective, you know, were there any other schools in the running, or as a kid from Eastern Pennsylvania, you thought,
oh,
the only place to go?
No, Penn State was a last ditch. I was recruited by primarily Brown, UCLA, Penn State, and the Naval Academy. And I wanted to go to the Naval Academy, and I got my appointment. And a week before plebe summer, my oldest brother went to the Naval Academy. They had fired the soccer coach. And I called the academy and said, who's the new coach going to be? And just like the Army would, or the military would do, you don't need to know. And so I pretty much said, well, I don't need to go. And it was one of those things, you never look back. You always take the chances and the opportunities. As it turns out, the academy got a very good soccer coach there. And all the schools had recruited me for soccer and football, to play soccer and to kick for the football team. And I always knew that in my mind's eye that I would play pro soccer 1 or 2 years, because pro soccer at that time, you didn't make anything. It was more for entertainment value. And then you'd have to go earn a living. The football had always been just extra, and it turned out to be a really nice extra. You know, the Steelers, my rookie year with the Steelers getting the Super Bowl.
Right.
That was such a good team. Bradshaw was in the locker next to me, and he's just like he is on TV. He's a good old boy. He talks when he wants to talk, and you listen when he tells you to listen. But the bottom line there was, that was such a good team. I think all 22 guys, offense and defense, ought to be in the Hall of Fame, because they won whenever they wanted to win. So when we won the Super Bowl, and it was their fourth in 6 years, nice. I'm getting a ring.
Yeah.
That was awesome. I got a lot of extra money in the playoffs. the neatest, the thing that really wet my whistle that season was when I saw myself on a bubblegum card. I said, this is great.
Yeah.
I'm on a football card. You know, and I didn't realize after the 80s with the Browns how hard it is not only to get to the Super Bowl, but to actually win it. You know, you need a little magic. You need a bounce to go your way. And that was, it was really a good experience being with all those tremendous veterans. And that's why I make Pittsburgh my home, because I still see all of them all the time. And it's a great town. And they taught me a lot about being a professional and being a better individual on and off the field.
That's awesome. Bob, questions for Matt?
Yes, Matt. We talked last week, Chris and I, about Joe Paterno. And any time we have any Penn State players come on, I remarked to Chris last week, I think Paterno was one of the greatest coaches of any era in any sport of all time. And to get people on the show who played for him, it's just a joy to hear their reasons why they thought he was so great. And basically, they all tell us the same thing about how much of a far-reaching effect he had when they became men. Just I'd like you to comment on that, Matt.
Well, I think you said it exactly. Please understand, Joe and I fought like cats and dogs.
Mm-hmm.
I was playing soccer. I would get beat up on a Friday night soccer game and then have to go kick in a Saturday afternoon football game. And all the time he asked me to give up, choose one sport over the other. And, you know, I'd always thank him. I'm surprised he put up with it that long, but I always chose soccer. And he'd go, well, wait a minute, Mac, maybe we can work something out. And what Joe, and I'm saying this in a bad way, but what Joe was the type of coach, when you played for him, you could never please him. He could be 300 yards away, and I'd miss a field goal, and it would be, I'm nuts, Bob, you stink. Get out of here. Either make the kick or get out of here. And it was always that. And you couldn't do enough to please him. And at the time, I'm just a dumb kid playing for a really good coach. And what it taught me was, if you're on the practice field, you're practicing to get better. If you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And I didn't really learn that until probably my mid-20s, when it dawned on me, because he was so demanding. He wanted you to get better in practice, so he knew what to expect on Saturday. And I've been privileged. You mentioned the teams I played for. I believe that I've played with more Hall of Famers than any player in the NFL through owners and teammates. I think I last count was 35 Hall of Famers, and they all
wow.
had the same goal. What can you do to help the team? What can you do to improve your own skills? And that's what Paterno lived by. That's what Parcells lived by. And I played for Chuck Knoll, Bill Walsh, Marty Schottenheimer, and they all demanded an excellence of, if you're not trying to get better in practice, you're getting worse. And that was it really was a good life lesson on and off the field. And that's why I admire Joe more today than when I played for him. He just, he made good citizens. And you can't say enough about that. And that's kind of why I'm involved in the thing that I'm doing now. Harvard is doing a health study on professional football players. And they're trying to get data on all professional players in all generations, 60s, 70s, 80s, and throughout. And whatever data they accumulate, they're trying to find how they can make their lives better. You know, whatever the data shows, it's going to show. And this is what's kind of, it really intrigues me, because they have no agenda. Now, it's Harvard. They don't need to answer to anyone. And they're
right.
trying, well, it's important, because we get inundated. The players get inundated with someone who wants to do their doctoral thesis, or, you know, they're just trying to do some sort of data study. And the players recognize that for what it is. This is a non-agenda-driven program. They're sending out questionnaires to all the players, anyone who played professional football. And they're trying to get their physical and mental state and, their position, how they played, what they did. Because you know that every era is different. The 60s were different from the 70s, from the 80s, from the 90s. You know, when I was a rookie with the Steelers, they did three-a-days at some point.
Wow.
They were always in pads. Today's players, they're practicing when the season starts. They're doing one day a week in pads.
Right.
Which, so the long-term health effects, they don't know. But they're, whatever the data shows, they're going to do. So I encourage all the players to get involved in this study, because it will help, you know, all of our long-term health and welfare.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to.
That's okay.
Hey, I did want to say one thing. I saw a story about Will Smith.
Right.
Way back when, and, you know, I heard you guys talking. Will Smith is such a hard worker. I wish he could have been a player in the NFL, because he works so hard. I remember a story on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air where he studied everyone's lines. And if you look at some of the early episodes of that, you can see him mouthing the other actors' lines because he knew them backwards and forwards so that he was ready to deliver his line. He is a hard worker, and you always admire that. You always admire the person who is putting in the extra effort to get the job done correctly.
And Matt, staying on the topic of getting better, you know, you had the older brother and you guys went to the same high school, and to have two brothers make it to the NFL is amazing. And of course, at the same position is amazing. You guys were basically the same size. You know, you must have, I'm sure you looked up to him, but I'm sure there was a lot of competitiveness. Do you think you would have been as good as you were had it not been for your older brother?
No question about it, but it's a dog-eat-dog world. Chris was 3 years older than me. My older brother, Casey, was 7 years older. And both my parents were phys ed teachers. So we had every ball, bat, and racket known to mankind at our house. And we were of the era, come in when it's dark or soon thereafter. For me, yes. I just wanted to play. So if I wanted to play with my brother's friends, I had to get snot out of me. And I would have to take it and not complain, or I'd never get to play with them again. And that really did help, because you, whatever sport they played, you're playing with the older kids. And I think that's lost a little in today's generation. First, the specialization of the sport. You're 12 years old and you have to make a career decision in what sport you have to play. Play all the sports, have fun. And you can tell the kids who play multiple sports, because that cross-training really helps, whether they're playing flag football, 7v7, volleyball, basketball, hockey, you name it.
Right.
Those, all the sports help contribute to your effort. And the better athletes will always be the better athletes. Why limit a kid when they're 12 years old? You don't ask them to make an educational choice when they're 12 years old. Why would you ask them to make an athletic choice at that point?
Good point. Good point. Matt, we've got our next guest, Chris Dolman, hanging on the line. We need to get to Chris, but what I got to ask you a question. One of the things that I've always remembered about you, particularly with your time with the Steelers, one of my favorite, you had one of my favorite celebratory moves of all time. You and Craig Colquitt with the jump, spin in the air handshake. That was awesome. How long did you guys work on that?
we talked it over. We worked on it a couple of days during the Super Bowl week. And it's funny how that's lasted, because it just was one of the few practiced dopey things that you do as a player. I'm embarrassed that they caught it on camera. But it was
perfect.
Pretty fun.
You guys hit it first try.
Yeah, but we did practice it, and we weren't very good at it. It was like, you know, the play that went to Stallworth over the top?
Right.
That worked twice? We ran that in practice for 2 weeks. It never worked once.
Wow.
So we ran it in the game, and it worked twice. And that's why you do that. That's why Chuck Knoll is a great coach. Bill Walsh, Bill Parcells, Joe Paterno. They demanded, hey, this is what it's all about. You're trying to win the game. And I know you want to get to Chris, and please do. But one of the things with the kickers, when I was a soccer player, if I played a 90-minute game and I had someone come in at the end of the game to decide whether I'm going to go home a winner or a loser who hadn't played 10 seconds, I would be upset. If they want kickers out of the game, change the rules. But don't put the onus on the kicker. Narrow the goalposts. The kickers are better these days. The ball is a better ball. The operation is better. They have specialists for the snap and the hold. My first snapper was Mike Webster. He could knock the holder over with the ball. And the successful teams that I played for, they settled for a field goal. They were angry when they came off the field and they didn't score a touchdown. And the teams that that go for the field goal, that their kicker is their MVP, they're always losing. They're losing because they want to make the field goal, and they always lose by a little.
Right.
So I'm all for trying to win the game, settling for a field goal, not trying for the field goal. And if they want to eliminate kickers, execute them all. I'm behind you.
Matt, thank you so much for being a part of it. I got so many other questions. I'm sure Bob
does
too.
We'll do this another time.
Yeah, I hope you'll come back and join us again sometime.
If I'm
We'd love to have you.
Be banned from this also.
Matt,
guys,
thank you again.
Have a great night. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
All right, we'll catch up soon. Take care, Matt.
All right, bye now.
Matt Barr. I'll tell you, Bob, I got 3 pages of questions from Matt Barr. I could have talked to that guy, you know, for the rest of the show. Unbelievable, you know, the amount of things he accomplished, 17 years in the league.
Yeah, and of course, being a former Steeler, I know you would have tons of questions. But yeah, his career and his family and the teams and his teammates.
His dad.
Yeah, looking through some of the Hall of Famers are incredible. But we'll talk more with Matt down the road.
Exactly right. All right. Now joining us on the Kyven Foods guest line, having been very patient waiting on the line for us, is Minnesota Vikings Hall of Fame defensive end Chris Dolman. Let me remind you a little bit more about Chris's background. He's from Indianapolis, Indiana, played his college ball at Pitt. So, you know, I love him right from the get-go. When he left there, he was ranked 3rd all-time on their sacks list with 25. He was a first-round draft pick, the number 4 overall selection by the Minnesota Vikings in 1985. Played in the NFL from 85 to 1999 for the Vikings, Falcons, and 49ers. Between 1987 and 1997, he played in 8 Pro Bowls, and he was named to the 1990s All-Decade Team. He is 4th all-time in career sacks with 150.5. In 2011, he was selected for the Minnesota Vikings Ring of Honor. A year later, in 2012, he was elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And we are very honored that he was patient with us, and he is joining us tonight on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Chris. Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari here. How are you, my friend?
Hi, Chris. Good, good. How are you guys doing today?
Fantastic. Thank you, Chris.
I enjoy listening to Matt Barr. He has a lot of stories, doesn't he?
Yes, he's got a lot of stories, and goodness knows we need to get more of them. But yeah, he's fantastic.
Yeah,
Chris,
great
before we start talking about your great playing career, tell our listeners about your site, domanity.com, and the fundraising that you do for charities.
Well, right now we're running a great campaign for Memorial Day weekend. We're doing something that's called Remember the 22. If you go to www.domanity.com/remember the 22, we'll bring up our site. And what we're talking about in this situation is that, you know, a suicide happens, you know, roughly about, you know, every 13 minutes. The military, remember the 22, we have a situation where that every day, and I mean every day, there's 22 veterans that take their lives. And that has to stop. I mean, we're losing more veterans during peacetime than we lost during the wartime. And we're trying to bring some awareness to them. Memorial Day is usually a day of starting, you know, the beginning of summer and pools. It's hot dogs and having fun. But this year and for this time going forward, I want to make sure that I honor our veterans the way they deserve to be honored, and bring as much attention to that as possible. So it's just, you know, this is a great campaign. This is an Instagram campaign. And how this works is that I have a bunch of celebrities that are participating in this campaign, and they're taking selfies of themselves, either wearing their number 22 or holding up a sign that says, "Remember the 22." And for a donation of $22, fans can join them on that Instagram page. And the cool part about it, guys, is that, you know, you can find yourself on the Instagram page, you know, save the, you know, take a screenshot and have as your screensaver. So it's something that, you know, is different. It's a great way. We thought about this. It's a great way to kind of introduce a lot of people that may not had been exposed to military veterans or, you know, war type of situation. To get them involved. And we just need everybody to think about our veterans this year and support us. And the site is, again, I tripped all over my tongue saying, is www.domanity.com/remember the 22. And awesome. You'll find the site. And if you Google me, I'm sure it will come up as well.
That's fantastic. Good for you for doing that, Chris.
Well, this is part of my life. So, I mean, you know, I love that. I love that part.
Chris, I watched some highlight films of you when you were with the Vikings, you know, that they had sort of put together, I believe, going around the time when you were going into the Hall of Fame. And there's a clip of you getting a strip sack on our mutual friend, Warren Moon. And there's another one of you flying past Warren, and on your way back by, you say to him, "You just dodged a bullet." And then you give a little hard time to left tackle Don Mag. Talk about that. What do you remember about that?
Well, you know what? We were playing at home. It was really one of those, you know, it was our season opener. We're playing the Oilers at the time. And, you know, they asked me to be mic'd. I'm not a talker when I'm out there on the field. But to have Don Mag's, you know, actually, you know, he was one-on-one with me, which I was surprised about. But, you know, I had to take advantage of the situation. And I think that day we ended up posting like 11 sacks. That was during the 89 season. That's a lot of sacks to give up on opening day. Then we turned around and just, I mean, we scored pretty much any way we wanted to. You know, it was a tough opening, you know, opener for those guys, but the Oilers. But, you know, we were, you know, being at home, we were able to get it done. So we were very happy with that performance.
You and John Randall, we've had John on the show, and I had the pleasure of meeting John at an event that Warren was hosting out in Phoenix earlier this year. But you and John combined for 4 sacks in a game against Warren when he was still with the Oilers. You guys sort of met at Warren's ribs, I think, on one of them. When Warren came over to Minnesota, did he say something to you guys about that?
You know, actually, at that point in time, San Francisco. I was in San Francisco. So I did not get a chance to, you know, be his teammate. We played against each other all the time in Pro Bowls and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure he had some words to say. I've known Warren for a long time. I mean, literally since I've been in the league. I can't tell you how much of a quality guy he is. You know, to do what he does as far as charitable work and community work and being tied into the community, you know, around the country, you know, you got to take your hat off to him and Dave Metzler. Both of them are just great, you know, human beings, and you know, they inspire all of us to do better. And that's what I think. That's what we need more in society. We hear so much negative stuff about players. I appreciate this forum to be able to talk about all the good the players are doing today and how they're able to change lives, you know, across this country.
Absolutely right. Chris, I'm from Pittsburgh, big Pitt fan. Pitt hasn't been relevant on the national championship scene since you were there. Are you disappointed with what you've seen out of the program over the last 30 years?
You know, I am. And to be honest with you, I don't know. I thought Dave Wannstedt was off to a decent start, although he hasn't done all the things that people would have liked for him to do. He was a Pittsburgh guy. I would have loved to see Sal Sinceri get the job when he was up for the job, a Pittsburgh guy. But, you know, you go and hire a guy, you know, Chris Paul, or Paul Chris, and he, you know, he stays a year and he leaves. I mean, first of all, the next guy you hire, you got to make sure that he stays.
Right.
You know, these guys are just coming in and building their resumes or just getting their chance to be a head coach, you know, because before they said, well, you don't have any head coach experience. You know, you go to Pitt, you stay a year, you make a bowl game, which isn't that hard anymore. Then boom, all of a sudden I got head coach experience and I'm ready to, you know, go to another university. There have to be some kind of mechanism that, you know, that makes these coaches or assure these coaches are going to be there for the time that they say they're going to be there, at least the length of their contract. You know, and it's not, there's two people that are really hurt by it, or two groups. One is that recruiting class that comes in and, you know, the seniors and the school, because it seemed like you can't keep a coach. And it's not that you're doing anything to get rid of coaches. Coaches are using this as a stepping stone. So we got to be a little bit more, prudent on who we hire as far as, you know, to lead our team, because you just can't have any of these guys are just fly by nights and coming in and they're there for, you know, less than a year and they're gone. It's just not good.
Chris, I'm a big fan of so many of the guys you got to play at Pitt with back in the late 70s and early 80s, especially, you know, Hugh Green, Ricky Jackson, our good friend Bill Moss. You sort of picked up the torch from Hugh and Ricky and carried the great linebacking play forward. But did you get a chance to talk with those guys, compare notes, and you know, maybe, you know, get tutored, if you will, by those guys?
You know, those guys were such great players. And when I was coming in, you know, they were leaving out. But I knew them because I did a postgraduate year at Valley Forge Military Academy. So, you know, I spent a lot of time at the University of Pittsburgh. And the thing about those guys and the thing that I've always admired Hugh and Ricky about is the level and the intensity of their play. If you watch those guys, you know, they didn't take plays off. I mean, they played hard every single down. They knew something that, you know, as, you know, I guess I just did not know. They kind of taught and set the tone for what type of player we're going to be, or players we're going to be while we're out there on the field. We're going to hunt. We're going to make sure that we get after people. But I also think that's a little bit of the Steelers' history coming out and the Steelers' you know, legendary following, you know, with Lambert and Jack Ham and, you know, Robin Cole, you know, those guys who were, you know, who were a part of that linebacker core. And it created an environment that you have to play tough. And by the way, a lot of the Steelers, you know, they didn't have their own facility. They trained at the University of Pittsburgh. So, you know, we got a chance to see them. And I know that, you know, just talking to those guys, that they set a tempo where that, you know, to play at the next level, this is what you got to do. And I think that's what carried Pitt through, you know, those great years when they were there.
That's great. Bob, questions for Chris?
Yeah, Chris, again, thanks for coming on the show. It's an honor to speak with you. And, you know, I'm about your same age, and I followed your career really closely. back in the 80s. And, you know, when you came in the league, Chris, I remember Bud Grant was on his way out, and he was a Hall of Fame mm-hmm. coach, and they changed coaches the following year. And, of course, you had different coordinators, and it seemed like a couple years there was a little bit of a log jam, and you probably had a period of adjustment. And then, of course, 87, it seemed like you really started getting very comfortable. Did you feel that there was a period of adjustment, Chris, until you were about 26 years old, until you said, now I'm a bona fide NFL player right now?
Well, and thank you for the kind words. I was Bud's last first round pick. And that right there, Bud Grant, is obviously a legendary coach, but he also expected you to, you know, play as a professional. He always talked about you're grown men, you're professionals, act like a professional. So we pretty much policed ourselves. The other thing is that Bud had very little patience for rookies, and he had even less patience for veteran guys, because he felt that you should know what you're doing by now. And so I had guys like, you know, Matt Blair and Fred McNeil kind of took me under their wings in that linebacker core, you know, Dennis Smith, who, you know, said, hey, look, you know, this is what you got to do to be successful in Bud's situation, because we didn't know how long Bud was going to be there, but we knew that Bud could be there longer than us. Even though we were younger, he could get rid of you. So he was a guy that really, you know, and I should just go back and put it to you this way, and you can get a clear picture. On Mondays, what we would do is cover punts for our PT, the running down the field, and just cover punts. The punter would just kick the ball as far as he could, and we had to run down there, field it, turn around, and run back on the sidelines. And one particular Monday, I was running down the field, and it's like, you know, you have, I think it's five or seven guys across, you know, on the line. And we were just streaked, just running down the field. And it was my rookie year, and I was running down the field and not particularly trying to be the fastest one or anything like that. It's just that I was just running, and I was running hard. And he called me over to the sideline. And he said, that's how you see how you ran down that field. And he said, that's how you have to play every single down. And that changed the course of my life. I mean, that really said, set the tone and set the bar where I said, okay, I know what I have to do to be productive out here. You know, it's easy to get mesmerized when you're out there playing because you're watching the game and you're kind of, you know, following behind and just jogging along. It's something entirely different when you're out there making the plays. And that was the thing that he always insisted on, having his players make plays. And I don't think, I remember, and I guess it was 94 when he got inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, I went over and thanked him for, drafting me. And he told me, he said, one day you'll be here. And sure enough, you know, that, you know, one of those, you know, very few words, but, you know, messages that meant so much to you, you know, you felt that I have a chance to making it to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But it all started back covering those punts and running down the field hard and playing hard. And, you know, here we are, you know, some years later, and we're both wearing gold jackets.
And speaking of the Hall of Fame, Chris, up here, we know you wore number 56, and up here in the Northeast, and your careers overlapped, mm-hmm. we would hear constantly about Lawrence Taylor, how he changed mm-hmm. the game, what kind of player he really was, how he had the motor that never stopped. I'm sure you were aware of his exploits, you know, being an opponent mm-hmm. and everything. Was there a lot of friendly rivalry there? Is he a guy you looked up to? Is he a guy that you just said, you know, we're both going to be in Canton someday? How did you approach the name of Lawrence Taylor, since he seemed to get all the ink in the world back mm-hmm. in the 80s?
Well, he was in New York. He was in New
Correct.
York. I knew that when we played the Giants and when our teams would play each other, I was going to show, you know, whoever sitting in the stadium, that this 56 is worthy of the same respect and credentials that your 56 has. And, you know, it's just a thing where that you just rise to that occasion. And, you know, LT played that position, I think, for 12 years or something like that, and finished, like, with 120-something sacks or something like that. I'm not sure of his numbers. But I played that position. I played defensive end for 13 years, and I finished with 150.5. So, you know, I can't take anything away from LT because, I mean, when I played, trust me, you know, he was kind of in my subconscious. Hollywood Henderson, Lawrence Taylor, those were my guys. Mm-hmm. And I got a picture with all three of the 56s, you know, that, wow. You know, that those were my guys. So, you know, no, I didn't try to mimic his life, but as a player, he was a great player, a great competitor. We play golf together every once in a while, even now, and I mean a great competitor. That is the thing that separate LT from everybody else. And LT had the thing where that, you know, he would talk that trash and he would bring it, and the legend would grow. So it was almost like Tiger in his heyday. People were like, we can't block him. We can't do anything with him. Yeah, you could. You just got to stand in there and do it. You know, and, you know, quit listening to all the hype that's coming out of there. He's going to make some plays. You can't stop him from making plays. But he also had that – he had a coach, Belichick, I think it was their coach at the time, just basically LT did what he wanted to do on the field. He would tell him, LT, wherever you think is going to happen, you make it happen. Because they knew wherever he was at, one – they're not accounting for him, and two, he's going to make a play. He's going to make something happen. It was almost a Junior Seau type of game plan. You know, Junior never really had a place to line up. He was just a guy that would just get out there and go. But they had the same motor. It's the same type of attack and the relentlessness that they have to get after the ball carrier or the quarterback or whoever it may be.
Chris, you had so many great games. And in 1989, you had a four-sack game against the Bengals and Boomer Esiason. Do you remember that game? Was Anthony Munoz in there at left tackle?
Anthony,
and
yes, he was. Yes, he was. As a matter of fact, I had a fifth sack on the sideline. And that you remember they had that in-the-grass rule?
Right.
I had him on the sideline, Boomer on the sideline, and he threw it. And they didn't give me the sack. They didn't give me the sack. But he was, yeah, trust me. I had 150.5, and I remember every single one of them.
That's
I mean, it is something that, you know, it's a big part of you. And it defined you. It you know, people knew that, you know, the quiet gentleman type of player, but, you know, the guy can, don't go to sleep on him. He can play now. And that is one of the things. I knew Anthony Munoz. He was lineman of the year, offensive lineman of the year, and I was defensive lineman of the year. There was going to be a matchup. And people, I mean, he was the standard. He was the standard, gold standard of tackles. So if you could prove yourself against him, then you've shown people that you can play. And I've had some success against him. Then we went, you know, played against each other in the Pro Bowl, and I had more success against him. So, I mean, it was one of those situations where that I think I just matched up very well with Anthony, you know, as far as size and speed and being able to keep him a little off balance on what I could do.
Did either one of them or both of them say anything to you after the game? I mean, that was rare. I mean, no one owned Anthony Munoz like that. And I got to imagine Boomer Esiason got tired of seeing you on top of him.
You know what? And you know what? The crazy part about it, because Anthony was such a pillar at that position, you know, at that left tackle position, they left him one on one. And it was just, I mean, it was my time to hunt. I mean, you know, I was going to come. I think he knew what kind of player I was, but, you know, somehow, sometimes when you get into a player and you get a little success, they start to press a little bit. And, you know, I would say maybe he started to press and take some chances that he shouldn't have taken. And I was able to slip past him and make some plays.
Chris, you played with the Vikings from 85 to 93, and then you went on to play a few years in Atlanta and San Francisco before coming back to play your last season in Minnesota. Was it important to you to finish your career as a Viking?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I knew that if I was ever considered for the Hall of Fame, I wanted to be considered as a Viking. You know, Minnesota brought so much to me and given so much to me. It's just one of those great, great cities, great places to play. The fans were tremendous. And I wanted to make sure that I shared that with them. I was traded, you know, Dennis Green traded me during the offseason in 94. And you never got a chance to say goodbye. And for me to come back and just give them that one last year, I would have did it for free. I mean, it was just such a wonderful time. You know, I played 12 games and had 8 sacks, and it was fun. And, you know, the irony of this whole thing is my 150th and a half sacks was against Brett Favre at
home. Is that right?
So, yeah. So, I mean, it was just one of those things where there's like, you know what, this is pretty cool. And I just love the city and love my time there.
Bob, a couple more for Chris before we let him go.
Yeah, Chris, and that time in Minnesota, you played in the Metrodome, and of course, going through the New England winter we just had here, we could understand some of those days in November, December in Minnesota couldn't be even more brutal, and I'm sure you were probably happy to be inside, but did you ever get used to playing in domes, Chris? You played so many home games. Even when you got to Atlanta, you were in domes. Was it actually a relief in a way to get to San Francisco to play outdoors more, or were you just so used to playing inside that it became second nature?
You know, I really enjoy playing inside. And I'm going to tell you the reason why. One was because of your footing. You didn't have to worry about your footing. You know there was going to be a fast track. If you're a fast player, even if you're a slow player, fast track is good. You know, you play faster. So it's just a thing where that I always enjoyed the fact that I could get out there and play as fast as, you know, as I could go and not worry about slipping on a corner or doing something that would, you know, prohibit me from getting it all, you know, playing all out. You know, when you get in this cold weather sometimes, I think, you know, you get a situation where that, you know, if the grass is a little bit longer, it slows you down. The field's a little bit softer, it slows you down. You almost got there and you slipped because of the, you know, the ground broke from underneath you. All those things happen. But you don't worry about it as much. It's one less thing to worry about, and you can focus on making plays and you know, helping your team, you know, during the game when you're playing indoors.
And I should tell our listeners, Chris, that 4 players from that 85 draft got into the Hall of Fame: Bruce Smith, yourself, Jerry Rice, and who was the last?
Andre Reed.
Yeah. So,
right.
I'm sure. I was just wondering if you ever been in contact with those guys to talk about that graduating class and how well they went on to do it. I mean, is it one big fraternity among you guys?
You know, it really is. The class of 85. We had a strong. First of all, the D-line and defense, or offense and D-linemen, were big in that draft. You know, Bruce went number one. Minnesota had switched with Atlanta, and Bill Frelick went number two. Ray Childress went number three. You know, I was a linebacker / defensive end, went number four. And Dwayne Bickett, number five. And I think Lomas Brown went number six. No, he didn't go number six because Vic went to Detroit. But all those guys, I mean, they were just all great college players. We were all, you know, pretty much similar to the same height. You know, we were impact players for our teams. And it was just one of those things where, you know, you knew that you were with a lot of talent. And, I mean, imagine being in that combine when you're sitting up there with 5 Hall of Famers. Sure. You know what I'm saying? I mean, right. You have to have your act together, because you know these guys, all the guys could play, but they're all good guys and they were humble guys. All of them were hardworking, and I think if there was a common goal, if there was a common theme between the class that you know that are the Hall of Famers, you know, of 85, it would be we all worked hard. We all were professionals about our craft, and we put in the extra time to make sure that we did as good as we could.
Chris, just curious to get your thoughts on where the Vikings are now. You know, they're looking up at the Packers and the Lions in the division. How do you feel about the status of where Minnesota is, and what do you look forward to them or seeing from them in the 2015 season?
Well, you know, I'm glad to hear this. Hear that they're not going to trade AP. I think AP, might be working under some information that might not be as legitimate as he may think it is. You know, right now that position at running back has been devalued. They've traded right. A lot of running backs, didn't pay a lot of running backs. You're at a team that that really needs you and want you and hold you in a very high esteem. So first of all, that's where you should be. You got a young quarterback. If you went to Dallas, Romo would not be handing it off to you. He's going to throw the ball. They got rid of DeMarco Murray because who is a great running back? Who is the top running back in the game? What make you think that all of a sudden they're going to change their philosophy because you walked in the door? It's not going to happen.
Right.
So he could really be an impact player in Minnesota more so than anywhere else. Because you know how much they would lean on him to offset the pass, and you know just literally make Teddy feel a little bit more comfortable. I think Zimmer is doing a pretty good job right now. I really would like to see more former players on their staff. There is a lot of family nepotism that's going on, and just because my uncle was a coach don't mean I can coach. It just doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm.
You want to earn one of the things you definitely want to earn. You want to earn the respect of your players. The day and age of, coaches being the coach, the player today want to have, they're of an era of, you got to show me. You know, back in the day when I was a player, if the coach told me to do something, I would just do it.
Right.
This day and age, you got to show them. They're not interested in going to a show. They want to meet the artists at the show.
yeah.
I mean, that's just, yeah. I mean, that's why, and I don't want to call them narcissistic, but that's what all this, Facebook and, Instagram and all these, Twitter rants. I mean, this is what all this stuff's about, them sharing, to the world what they feel like and what they think and how they see it. That doesn't make it right, but that is the generation that you're dealing with. And
right.
I think when a player that has, credentials that is coaching, can sit up and say, hey, look, man, I did this. The game hasn't changed that much. Even though your attitude might change about the game hasn't changed. And this is what we need to do to be successful. People buy that. They understand that. And I think there's a certain brotherhood and there's a certain camaraderie, because when you look at it, there's only been so many players that ever wore the uniform. There's been a lot of coaches. Coaches been there for a year. Coaches have been there for 6 months. Coaches have been there for 20 plus years. But as far as players, when you read the history of a team, you're not going to read the history of the coach unless he was a Bud Grant or a Bill Walsh. So the most of these coaches, they're just asterisks and, or side notes and, in the journal. He was on the staff. But a player who was there can talk to another player and communicate with respect that, okay, it's a mutual respect. He understands, the position. He understands what I'm trying to do. He understood what I was thinking when I did what I did. That makes a big difference.
Chris, so before
to answer your question, I think they'll be better.
All that means the Vikings are going to be better next year.
Yeah.
That's great. Chris, I understand from a mutual friend of ours, Vincey Glenn, that you're actually a really good golfer. Not as good as him, he'll tell you, but good. What's the state of your game?
I beg to differ.
Is that right?
Yeah. As we say in the South, Vincey better redneckinize. We get after last time I played Vincey, I beat him both times.
Is that right?
Yeah, then it's always on working on my game. I'm working on my game. Okay, Vince. Well, when you get it right, call me again. I'll beat you a third time. So, but Vincey, let me tell you something. Vincey knows golf. Vincey Glenn is, if he wasn't doing what he was doing working with Warren, he should be coaching golf because the guy knows golf swings. I mean, he really, really does. Oh, my God, yeah. He could be a great, great teacher. And he understands it. Now, he couldn't hit it out of his room because he don't hit it that far, but he can tell you how to hit it far. So, but no, Vince is a great, I know he's listening to this show, so I had to give him a little stuff, but he is a great player. I'm just greater.
That's awesome. Good for you, Chris.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I'd love to see that match. I'd love to, tee it up or at least be in the gallery when the two of you play. That ought to be a lot of fun to watch.
Well, all you got to do is say a time and place. I'm there.
Yeah, I appreciate you. Chris, remind our listeners one more time about how they can follow you and Dolmanity online and then, of course, over social media as well.
Yes. If they could tune in to www.dolmanity.com. And remember the 22. This campaign's amazing. I think we would, I know our veterans would appreciate it. I would appreciate it. You can also, follow me on Facebook and Twitter, Chris Dolman, @ChrisDolman. I'm not a big social media guy, but it's amazing that I have a tech company that raises money for nonprofits, And I don't even do a lot of social media, but the thing is that how can we help guys, maximize their efforts in their fundraising? That model, has to change. And, we're one of the new faces and the new kids on the block to help change that.
That's fantastic stuff. Chris, thank you so much for being generous with your time and patient with us and coming on the show tonight. You're fantastic. I hope you'll come back and do it again sometime.
Absolutely. I love it.
All right.
Thank you.
Chris, take care and all the best to you and your family. We look forward to catching up with you again, hopefully really soon.
All right. Thank you so much, Chris.
Good night, Chris.
Good night.
Great stuff, Bob. I tell you, he had a great career and just, and I love the way he's told the stories and the enthusiasm in his voice. Great stuff.
Yeah, Chris, you get that different feeling when you're talking to one of the all-time greats, and he was. When you think about it, look at his stats, and the reason why I brought up LT is that his on paper, his stats were right with LT's, and LT had free reign at the quarterback, unlike Dolman. So, that's how good Chris Dolman was, and for those who remember and go back long enough, won't forget the way he played. So I'm good he could come on and explain that. And great guy. And we only touched the surface with him also, Chris.
Exactly right. All right, we're hoping that Johnny Rogers and Hess Hempstead are still able to join us. We've got Lee Steinberg coming up at the bottom of the hour. Bob and I will be back on the other side of a word from our friends over at Kyven Foods and Coastal Orthopedics.
This is Reggie Kelly, former Cincinnati Bengals and Atlanta Falcon tight end, and I'm the owner of Kyven Foods. And if you enjoy delicious food, you're going to love my Kyven products, which consist of our honey apple salsa, sweet barbecue sauce, and an array of seasonings. For store locations, online orders, and recipes, check out our website at www.kyven82.com. That's KYVAN82.com. One taste, and you'll appreciate the goodness.
Are you suffering from chronic pain in your shoulders, hips, knees, or wrists? Tired of living life with an old injury that just won't go away? If you answered yes to either of these questions, we can help. At Coastal Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, Dr. Candelora and his fine staff of medical professionals will get you back on the road to recovery. Their state-of-the-art facility and attention to detail will ensure you will be enjoying life again and feeling invincible in no time. Since 1991, Dr. Candelora and Coastal Orthopedics have been specializing in joint replacement, arthritis, and osteoporosis care, as well as pediatric and adult general orthopedics. Visit us on the web, www.bone-dr.com, or call our Newport Richey office just north of Tampa at 727-848-1417. Proud sponsors of Mike Ditka's The Gridiron Greats Assistance Fund.
Hey, hey, welcome back. This is Todd Washington, two-time Super Bowl champ, offensive line coach for the Baltimore Ravens, and you are listening to Thursday Night Tailgate with my boys Chris Moscato and Bob Lazzari on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Go get them, guys.
Well, that was a little testy. Lost power, lost everything there for, what, 2 or 3 minutes there, Bob. You still with me, my friend?
I'm here, Chris. Technology is great when it works.
Yeah, it is great when it works. I agree with that. But yeah, everything dark, everything gone. So hopefully, thank goodness we got it back up and running. But Lee Steinberg should be joining us here in a few minutes, Bob. But in the meantime, wanted to kind of get your thoughts on some other things going on, you know, around the NFL. One of the big issues, Bob, remains, you know, what's happened with the Deflategate situation, and now they're calling for Roger Goodell to recuse himself from being judge and jury, if you will, but looking, you know, at the appeal. So, what are your thoughts? What are you guys hearing up there in New England about what's going to happen next with the Deflategate situation?
Well, you got to understand, Chris, up here in New England, it's probably quadrupled of what you guys are hearing throughout the country, how incredibly inundated we are with it on a daily basis, and people are just so sick of it. And it's not even football season. That's the crazy thing. It's almost like trumping the Red Sox, and it's that crazy up here. But, yeah, we're kind of tired of it, Chris. And, you know, I was talking to a guy today, and he kind of said what a lot of us think. You know, you could have an opinion on the penalty and who's a cheater, who's not a cheater, but the NFL, he said, the NFL is like a fish. You know, it stinks from the head down, Chris, and it all starts on Park Avenue in New York. You know, that's the way you got to look at this thing. It's all about money making, and you know, Goodell, in one way, We've already talked about some of his handling of some of the indiscretions, should we say, of some of these players over the last year or two, and some of the situations. It's never been clean, Chris. It's all about money making, and the NFL will continue to make money. So they want to kind of let it blow around, and right now the PR fix is in, trying to see how we can get this to a point where possibly they lessen the penalties and things kind of go away and money starts rolling in again and the Patriots continue to be the Patriots. But so many people have come out, ex-players, coaches, and say the Patriots aren't the most, let's say, kosher organization in the world. So very interesting stuff, Chris. We hear things on a daily basis, and it's nothing I don't think any of us really didn't know.
Right. All right, we've got our next guest hanging on the line now. Back with us on the Kyven Foods guest line is our friend and a guy we have a ton of respect for, and that's Lee Steinberg. Lee's book, The Agent, My 40-Year Career Making Deals and Changing the Games, is a New York Times bestseller. He also hosts his own show on Yahoo Sports Radio called Behind Closed Doors that airs Monday nights at 8 o'clock Eastern Time, and he is one of the busiest and most sought-after people on the planet. His schedule is absolutely crazy, which is one of the reasons why it's always a privilege for us to say that he's joining us again tonight on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Lee, how are you?
It's my pleasure, gentlemen. You complete me.
I appreciate that. Lee, I saw your tweet where you gave kudos. We're just talking a little bit deflate-gate here. You gave kudos to Patriots owner Robert Kraft for looking at the long-term interests of his team and the league with respect to moving on from this situation. I know you have a great deal of mutual respect for one another, you and Mr. Kraft. What are your thoughts about what's been made so far about the issue, and is it, how good is it that he's decided to move on?
Well, first of all, occasionally there's an issue that hits the third rail of visceral public opinion and transcends sports. So you saw that with Donald Sterling. You saw it again with Ray Rice. And for whatever reason, this Deflategate got people talking in beauty parlors. It had them doing discussions around the office coolers. It hit a nerve. I think part of the reason is because what separates professional sports from wrestling, what makes people believe that it's worth putting time and money and playing fantasy sports and going to games and watching on television, is the certainty that the games are played on an even playing field. So same rules, same equipment, and it's coaching decisions and the intensity of the players on the field that is making the difference. And anything that undercuts that strikes people as dishonest and destabilizes them. So this issue sort of ran away. If I had been Tom Brady, I think I just would have said, you know, fellas, I am a competitor. I love to play the game, and I like to throw a little softer ball. So I'm sure I pushed the staff hard to give me those balls. And if that created something that went over the line, I'm really sorry. And I think it would have been over. It would have been over. So what you see so many times in these situations is it's not the original transgression. It's what happens afterwards and how it's handled. And you don't have a press that is your father's press, where they took money from teams, went on team planes, were afraid of teams and leagues. This is Woodward Bernstein time. And what we see happen is that they match up statements. So whether it's Roger Goodell or Tom Brady, they look and see what someone said then and what they say now. So I believe they had to move to deal with it. It wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. No one has more positive feelings generated over these last 15 years than Tom Brady. Not a hint of anything untoward. So he could have gracefully sort of gotten out of this. Now they're in a situation where the problem is that if you sue the league, all that happens is an endless amount of stories that conflate your name with cheating. So whether or not they're stories about being cleared, people don't necessarily read all that closely, and so you just get a repetition over and over and over again of Patriots cheating, Brady cheating, and it's not real helpful. So in damage control, that's sort of the way we do it. Wrap our arms around all the facts, understand if we have any culpability at all. If we do, come out quickly and make an apology to all the relevant groups, show that there'll be action to prevent a recurrence, and then the healing begins.
So, Lee, to that point, right, we've seen so many times over the last couple of decades of guys that have been, you know, caught with steroids or some form of PEDs, mostly on the baseball side, but we have a little bit in football as well. And we've seen where they've denied, and then all of a sudden, you know, a year or two later, then they, you know, okay, you got me. Yeah, I did do that back then, A-Rod being an example of that. Why don't guys learn what you just said? You know what? Come out. Say what you did. You know, you can minimize it if you want. You know, Andy Pettit, I only did it twice. You know, and we are a forgiving society, and we move on. Why haven't they learned that lesson?
Well, I think, in part, if you're taking the NFL, for example, there's a lot of arrogance there, and I think they've lost a little bit, while they can do it in a marketing sense, a little bit of the pulse of people and an understanding of what's going on, a feeling you can control everything. Well, guess what? You can't. So you may as well evaluate what your circumstances are. It's not the worst thing in the world to admit you made a mistake. We all do. And
come out quickly. Make sure that you know enough of the facts so you're not going to say something that is later refuted or sounds contradictory. And then defuse it quickly. Even with the worst of things that have happened, where it's Kobe Bryant in a horrible situation or Ray Lewis, time passes. If there's performance on the field, people forgive. This has turned a smaller molehill into a mountain, which really was unnecessary. And you think of the irony of all this. This is Roger Goodell, who, when he was at his worst point, when there were calls for his resignation during Ray Rice, so had one person stand up for him vociferously. It was Robert Kraft. So right. This is a lot of soft tissue damage being done. Yet anybody who thinks the league was picking on the Patriots, and I know that's how people feel in New England, because when I wrote that tweet, it was like, oh my God. I always think Facebook is nice and Twitter is mean. So, but my point is that unless you're in this area, you know that the Patriots have been like the model franchise for the league. One ball on Spygate, but they've been it. Tom Brady's the model poster boy. They just won the Super Bowl. You think that they really were looking to try to have this horrible thing happen? The Patriots right. ought to move on and go win another Super Bowl.
You've got a young client, Garrett Gilbert, who's a backup quarterback for the Patriots. And, you know, Lee, if the Patriots end up being Tom Brady for 2, 3, 4 games, whatever it ends up being, will this actually give Garrett maybe a greater opportunity to show what he can do in training camp and throughout preseason?
It will, but here's the thing. The suspension wouldn't take place until the games themselves. It doesn't take place right. during training camp. So here's the way those things cut. If the Patriots are confident enough with Garoppolo that with their team, they probably can win 3 out of 4 of the games anyway if it was 4, and they probably win both the games anyway if it's 2. You know, the quarterback's a key position, but there is a system. So my sense is that if they're confident with him, and he is in his second year, although he hasn't had much game experience, then that offers a great opportunity because last year they kept 2 quarterbacks, and this year we're hoping to keep 3 because they're definitely going to keep Garoppolo. And they like Garrett quite a bit, and he knows the system. So what you're looking for in that situation is either someone with game experience or who knows the system. I've always felt it was catastrophic to carry 2 quarterbacks into the season because number 1 gets hurt, number 2 is up, and then what happens is that you have a really difficult time finding someone who's been through training camp. You can't just pick them up or off of trees. You know, it's very difficult.
Right. You have an agent academy to help train people on how to be an agent. And one of the things you discuss in there is collective bargaining. So when you hear NFL players or the NFL Players Association express concern about Roger Goodell acting as both judge and appeals judge, do you kind of shake your head and have no sympathy in that situation because they had an opportunity to collectively bargain that?
They did have an opportunity, and they didn't do it, but I'm not criticizing the union. I mean, they started out with 55% of the gross, and it ended up 47% of the gross. I think they missed that issue, and the deal was done in 2011, and we've seen over and over and over again the whole question of who disciplines, how it's done, what the appeals process is, be brought into question, and it's mostly because of Peterson, Hardy, Rice, and a whole series of different difficulties that they've had. Why Roger Goodell would want to hear that case when his involvement with the previous ones has been so contentious, has infuriated the player so much, and has brought him nothing but problems? I have no idea. I don't get it. He brought in some ex-FBI agent, an ex-prosecuting attorney. There were a whole series of folks that were supposed to replace him in the process. And why that hasn't happened, I don't have any idea.
Bob, questions for Lee?
Yeah, Lee, we haven't spoken since the Aaron Hernandez verdict and all the ink. That's another big story up here, of course, in New England. And, you know, we're hearing, Lee, there was so many warning signs of him. He went to high school just down the road here. And at Florida, we're hearing a lot more that went on and everything. As an agent, Lee, would you have been very leery about signing on with this guy, and just what's your whole thing? It's a very sad story in so many ways.
It is very, very tragic. The hardest thing is to predict human behavior. If there was a metric, a test, a way of discovering the propensity for antisocial behavior, it would be an invaluable tool. There's a fellow named Dave Blanchard who has a test like that. I think the NFL is going to go to it more and more. So that, is there a way to take someone in high school and predict that he's going to have behavioral problems in college? Or is there a way of predicting that he'll have fear of triumph or fear of failure problems? So the point is that there were enough different things in Adrian Hernandez's background. I mean, he, like, knocked the eye socket or broke the jar, did something with someone at a campus bar. Here's the problem. Every team thinks that their coaching and their system can take someone who's got a troubled background and they can turn it around. But the truth of it is, if you've got a true recidivistic personality, you can't. Now, we don't want to throw young men on the trash heap of history for one aberrational act. Gosh knows that all of us did things in college that we probably would rather not have on national TV. So the question is, did you learn from that? Was this a shock to the system that straightened you out? Or is this a situation where this is just going to be a pattern? It's a tricky thing to figure out. The consequence of missing the call, is catastrophic for an NFL team in this modern era, because they lose the player, and because of the structure of the cap, they not only lose the player, but they lose the cap room to replace him. So they've got dead cap space, they're hampered for the future. And then they're in a really, really difficult situation if it's a key player. So we need better analytics. We need better metrics. We need a better way of analyzing future behavior in athletes. This was supposed to be the character draft, and yet we saw example after example of players with problematic backgrounds being picked high. And I hope they all make it. I hope they all learned. You know, we've all made mistakes, but if they haven't, that, I mean, Tampa Bay's in a high-risk, high-reward situation. If Jameis Winston is great behaviorally and turns out great as a player, they're in great shape. But if he doesn't, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, exactly. And getting on to a more positive topic, Lee, I know you made a speech today in Orange County, and that was, I think, at the National Aging in Place Council. And you make so many speeches throughout the year, and you talk to so many different groups and age categories and organizations. I was wondering, Lee, do you have to contour every speech to that specific audience, or are there certain things that you kind of keep with you every time you speak to a group?
Well, what I keep with me is always talking about the concept of athletes as role models, the fact we all can make a difference in the world, how they retrace their roots to the high school, collegiate, professional community, and why emphasizing second career is important. But each audience will have a different message, and so today was a group of professionals who work with seniors, and so I talked a lot about the concept of the family and how we treat people who are older and the fact that we assume we'll never get there. And look, my dad had two core values. One was to treasure relationships, especially family, and the second was to try to make a meaningful difference in the world and help people who can't help themselves. So to the extent I can give back to all these different groups or do something like the Agent Academy where we are trying to train the next generation of ethical, moral professionals, I just feel it's important to do that.
Lee, we had Steve Barkowski on with us last fall, and one of the things I asked Steve about was, you know, the Falcons, you know, are building a new billion-dollar stadium here in Atlanta. And I asked, you know, how are you going to attract fans to go there? You know, with the cost of, you know, game day tickets, parking, concessions, when you're looking to bring a family or of four or five, in my case, you're looking at, you know, $1,000 a day. And for that amount, I mean, you can go out and buy a 65-inch screen TV. You can get the NFL Sunday ticket. You can watch all the games from your home and probably still have money left over. You know, I think, how are you going to do it, Steve? And he's like, I don't know, but I hope they figure it out. You know,
well,
I'm curious to get your point. What do you think?
Yes. They certainly can fill all the stadiums. You're in the South. You're in a football-crazy area. It's only 10 concert dates. You're right about the economics. The larger issue is you can sell those luxury boxes because there's enough people in every city, enough corporations who want to do that. There are enough people who will pay for premium seating. The question is, are you building for the future? Because my thought is that if we don't have young men attend, play the game themselves, or attend sports live, then I think it's hard to extend the experience, because then you're right. But so the point is, it's so funny you say that, because Barkowski was the first player where we said we'd take a cut in his pre-existing salary to the extent that the owners would lower ticket prices. Because I wanted to save 10,000 seats every week for working families, kids, and all the rest of it. So at least at the end of the year, you know, you would have 100,000 people who'd been exposed to it. The other issue is this: how do you keep a peripatetic young generation that has attention deficit problems and is controlling every second of sensory experience through their thumb? They're YouTubing, they're tweeting, they're playing shooting games with God knows who, headsets around their head, and they have the illusion they can control every second. So it subverts attention span. It has a chilling effect on the ability to concentrate for periods of time. So one of my proposals in an article I wrote was, let's put a monitor in front of every seat in a stadium, and down one side will run your fantasy stats, down the other side will run your gambling bets. Underneath, you'll have the capacity to talk smack and text to people inside and out of the stadium. We'll let the fans vote on one play call a game that the coach has to call, and we'll let the fans vote for one referee overturn that the referee has to change. And then you touch that, and you can order from the snack bar, and you touch the screen, and you get an unremitting amount of content and games and puzzles and all sorts of things. So they have to turn stadiums, especially in baseball, where you have 81 home games, into happenings, into experiences, because fans are going to see, with the best of teams, a number of losses. And with a baseball team, you know, that might win 90 games, but if it loses 72, you're going to see 36 losses. So you have to turn it into an experience from the moment you walk on the property, with many things to do, with alternatives, with interesting technology and promotions and all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm. Bob, you got one more question for Lee before we let him go?
Well, Lee, just the fact that, you know, the inspiration that you provide these groups, do you ever get home afterwards and say to yourself, man, that was one of my better ones, or I could have done better, or are you critiquing these things, or is it always a good thing?
It's usually a good thing because it's a good message, and they're good people. But what happens is you meet an extraordinary amount of people, and you're able to do inspiration. You know, I had problems with alcohol and my 6-year recovery. So one of the things to say to them is, look, no matter how bad life is, it's a question of proportionality. We're not starving peasants in Sudan. We're not crippled. We have all these different things. So why don't we use this little time we have on the earth to try to be kind to other people and make a positive difference and see if we can make things better and enjoy the time we have.
Amen. Well, you talk about your show Behind Closed Doors and how people can tune in and hear more about you and the things you're doing.
So we do it every Monday night. It's live in, I don't know, 100 markets. If you can't get that, then it's yahoosportsradio.com/listen. And I just told you as much about the Internet as I know.
That's good.
Better off.
Lee, thank you so much for taking time out of your night to be a part of the show. We always are very grateful and enjoy having you as part of it. You're fantastic.
Well, I'm a big fan, and I think you guys provide a quality product, so keep it up.
Thank you very much, Lee. I look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Good.
Take care. Lee Steinberg, Bob, to Lee's point, one of the things that is going to become an issue here before very long, and we've talked about this on the course of this show and others that you and I are on, but today's generation, kids, my kids' age and a little bit older, Lee talks about attention deficit disorder, and that's probably on some level true because they're so wrapped up in everything about social media. I know I get really wrapped up in social media, as we try to publicize the show and the things that we're doing and the guests that we're going to have. But, kids today, you look at in the stands and they're not paying attention, nine times out of 10 to what's going on the field. They're tweeting, they're, Instagramming, Snapchatting, all that sort of stuff. That is, he makes a very valid point. The league has got to do something. All the leagues have got to do something to keep, folks entertained because, if not, this whole generation is going to be like what we hear, stereotypically about the Dodgers, right? People show up in the third, they're gone in the seventh, because that's about all the attention span we have left.
It's a fascinating phenomenon, Chris. What's going to happen? We've talked about that when the new Yankee Stadium went up here, about the empty seats where they were trying to get those $1,500 seats. Are you going to have pure baseball fans around 10, 15 years from now that are going to be there? Or are they going to be also up, in the bar, watching the television and doing other things? The interest is definitely not what it was. So you're right. They're going to have to do things in the stadium or scale down to the fact. I don't think you'll ever see prices come down, but to make it, again, attractive to a generation who is used to doing more than three or four things at once. To us, it was always a scoreboard, keeping score, Chris, and watching the game, right? Well, this is a different generation, and trust me, I've worked with enough kids. They're not going to be fans. It's going to be a thing where kids are going to be there because it's the place to be. And it's the stadium's and the team's responsibilities to provide the entertainment in the future.
Right, exactly right. So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see, the example with, here in Atlanta. It is going to be very interesting to see what they do with that new stadium and how they intend to bring fans out to come to the stadium and keep them, to your point, entertained, for 3 or 4 hours on a Sunday if it's football, 3 hours if it's a baseball game, because, things are going to be new and different, and I'm excited to see what that new and different is going to be. Plus, here in Atlanta, what does $1 billion get you? And that's going to be fun to check out when it's ready.
Absolutely.
All right, my friend, it's time for us to put a bow on this one. Disappointed not to have Johnny Rogers or Hess Hempstead with us tonight. Hopefully those guys are all right and we can get them rescheduled for another night. But, obviously great to get the opportunity to talk to Matt Barr and Chris Dolman and Lee Steinberg, three great guests. So thanks to them for being a part of the show tonight. Next week's my annual golf weekend with the boys. So we'll be taking next week off. We'll be playing a best of for everybody, so we'll get that out to you next Thursday night. We'll be back 2 weeks from tonight with another great lineup. Who's going to be here? Well, Former Broncos, Giants, and Falcons head coach Dan Reeves will be back with us. Dan, originally scheduled to be here with us tonight, but had something come up, so we got him rescheduled to be back with us here in 2 weeks. Our good friend and new author, J.J. Burden, will be here to talk about his new book. That's about ready to hit the market. Another great friend and a great wide receiver, Musa Muhammad, going to be back with us. Always great to have the Moose as part of the show. Former Rams linebacker Troy Pelshak is also going to be making a return visit. Troy was there with the Rams when they won the Super Bowl a few years back. And another one of our favorite guests, former Steelers, Seahawks, and Patriots linebacker Chad Brown will be here. So it's going to be another great show. We hope you'll come back and be a part of it. Hopefully no more power outages. So come back and join us in a couple of weeks. For us, how can you find us on Twitter and social media? Well, I am at CT Mascaro on Twitter. Bob is at Bob_Lazzari. The show is at TNT Podcast. You can find us online, ThursdayNightTailgate.com, and check out our Facebook page. Give us a like. That's important to us, too. You can go on our site, ThursdayNightTailgate.com. You can stream or download any of our archive episodes for free from there. Plus, you can stay up to date with who some of our future guests are going to be as well. Bob, take us home, my friend.
All right, Chris, thanks for your help, and hit him straight and far next week, please.
Thank you.
Of course, our thanks to our announcer, Joe LaGenusa, for the great job he does with our weekly intro and ads, and to Kyle Turley, Tim Pickett, and all our friends over at Gridiron Records for their partnership and our upcoming outro music. On behalf of myself and Chris, we thank everyone out there for listening tonight. We appreciate you the most. Until next week, good night, Kevin. Keep fighting.
Coming down the mountain, I take a breath of sin. Can't tell the day or time, but I know this day will end. On a mission I can't.